Welcome back to episode 192 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of ratings game. But let's be real. As Noel Studer says, the plateaus are the norm. You have to learn to enjoy them. And sometimes below that, we dive into the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Tim Everett, Scott D4P6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, Andrew Rimmer, Trevor Mocha, Mohamed Ibrahim, Bruce Campbell, Ian Mason, Adam Will T, Kenny Gray, Matthew Siebert, and King level supporter Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes. Our guest today did exactly that. And if you're interested in getting better at chess, Noel Studer has a new program. It's an update of his older courses where he's channeling all of his amazing energy these days, the Simplified Chess Improvement System. There's, of course, a code in the show notes if you want to check that out. And if you like watching people struggle playing chess, you can check out my YouTube series, The Road to 2200, where I'm trying to reach 2200 lead chess. I just recorded two episodes yesterday. I won them both. It's not a spoiler because you won't know which episodes they are. I just wanted to let you do know I do win sometimes. It's a miracle. And I also have a new Chessable course, the Chess Journeys Tactics Workbook, Turning Knowledge into Skill, where I seek to take six motifs and help you truly understand them deeply so they pop out to you during your games. What's great about Chessable is all the courses come with a money-back guarantee. So if you're like, that sounds cool, and then you buy it and you're like, Kevin, that was a terrible course, just return it. You get your money back. It's no big deal. All right. Last thing, we do have a sponsor for the show, Chessnut. They make a variety of electronic chess sets. They were wonderful enough to send me one. I have really been enjoying the Chessnut Pro. It's set up just to the left of me, and I've been playing a ton with it, actually, the last week. I've been on spring break. I've played Blitz with it. I've played Rapid with it. I've played Classical with it. I even played a 3-2 game with it. Boy, it's hard to play 3-2 Blitz when you're moving your opponent's pieces, I gotta say. That was a challenge, but it was fun, and I definitely recommend the setup for you if you're looking for just more over-the-board chess and you don't have that opportunity. All right, well, we're going to bring in our guest today. We have Trenton. He's a college student from Illinois on a constant grind for chess improvement. Trenton, welcome to the show, and have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
I actually have not today, no.
Okay, when do you usually play chess? Do you have a set time you play, or do you just kind of play whenever you get a chance?
It kind of varies. Usually I just play in the morning right away, or sometimes it's the afternoon, but I always try to get at least a couple games a day in and just get that consistency, so that way I never like have a burnout or I struggle and have bad days where I'm not playing the best. I kind of like to be consistent, so that way if I ever am having like bad chess days, it's like I can look at why certain days are bad, why other days are good.
Okay. So do you limit yourself also to just a couple of games a day, or are you saying that's your minimum?
That's my minimum. I always try to get at least one game a day in, just so I never like plateau. And I mean, I do still plateau, but I've noticed being consistent and like not taking breaks allows you to want to constantly learn something new.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I've heard a lot of coaches, especially I know Noel Studer has a recommendation that you play and study 6 days, and then the seventh day is your pre-planned break day. I don't do that myself. Ooh. I just go all seven. Sounds like you might be in the same ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, there's days where I've read like people like Magnus and some other players. There's days where they'll get really good and they'll play really good like all day. And then they'll get another day where it's just like they cannot stand chess. They don't want anything to do with it. They'll still play games just for like getting, you know, the rust off. But like there's days where things just aren't clicking and they just do not want to be near a chessboard. They're like, I'll play a couple games, but I'm taking a break for the rest of the day to do something else. And I get those a lot as well. So I noticed we have that in common.
Okay. So you're saying like, if you're not feeling it, you'll just limit yourself to like one game and then be like, all right, that's my chess for today. I've been consistent. I mean, I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, I'll play maybe 5 to 10 games where like I'll play like 2 rapid and then I'll play like 5 blitz or a couple bullet or something. And I'll kind of break up the time to see maybe if I'm playing better at certain time frames and not playing good in other time frames. I notice sometimes when I play in like blitz lately, I haven't been playing the best, but when I play like a 10 minute or 15 minute, it allows me more time to kind of think and not panic and rush into things, and I play better moves that way. So that kind of helps too. Some days it's like I'm not having a good blitz day, but I might be having a good rapid. And I kind of try to like pinpoint exactly where I'm going wrong that day.
Okay, interesting. I definitely agree with that. There are days where I can do the high level thinking, but the quick thinking isn't working as well, and other days where the quick thinking just, it's where I want to be, and the high level thinking, I'm like, I'm too tired for that. So it sounds like you play a wide variety of
Yeah.
types. You play classical, rapid, blitz, and
Yeah.
bullet. Nice. Do you have a favorite?
Classical not as much, but my favorite time frames probably like 10 minute or like 15 10. Sometimes I like playing with increments, sometimes I don't. It really varies, but it's usually that rapid range of like 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
I
And
think
like,
it's the best. Sorry.
yeah, no, go ahead.
I think it's the best like time frame because you're not sitting there for like 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes where it's like a really slow game and it's still not like so fast where like you're making a move within, 10, 15 minutes every time, or I'm sorry, 10, 15 seconds every time and you have like no time to think. It's more like, okay, I'm just going to kind of play things out. But at least with increment, you're kind of building a time frame like you're gaining time every time you make a move. So in that opening stage of things, you're building up like a huge time bank of minutes, and then you can use that time later on. When you play a 10 minute, you kind of gotta still play fast, but at least you still have that time where like if you are at a very crucial part of the game, you can spend a couple minutes and it's not gonna kill your whole game.
And use mostly bullet to improve at chess. Is that its main function?
I usually play blitz when I want to get that intuition but like stronger where it's like if I need to play really fast in like a slow paced game or something at the very end during an end game, like I try to build that up. But yeah, I mean, I don't recommend playing like insanely fast games if you are going to be playing in tournaments and you're going to be playing like very serious chess. I think it's better to take things slow. Learn how to walk before you run the marathon, kind of thing.
Okay, it's good
Where
analysis.
it's like, yeah, it's kind of like you don't want to jump into something where you're still making blunders, even in like slow paced games.
Gotcha.
That's how I look at it, at least.
Yeah, and I do like your idea that blitz can be really useful for building intuition, getting the comfort of moving fast. I know my daughter and I have done these challenges where I was struggling with playing on a 10 second delay in end games where I had no time. So we played a whole game where I just had 10 seconds for the entire game, but I had a 10 second delay. So it was like getting me used to that feeling. I knew I wasn't working on chess improvement, but I was specifically targeting that intuition and that ability to move quickly.
Yeah, because I noticed a lot of players like back in the day, a lot of them found the best moves off of intuition. They didn't even like really study. It was just in the heat of the moment, their mind just works differently. And I feel like if you build that intuition, sometimes you don't need to like study openings super heavily or study very historical games. It's just like building that intuition. And then when the heat of the moment comes, if your opponent doesn't have that same level of intuition, you can outplay them.
Okay.
And
How
that's
do
kind
you build your
of
intuition?
For me, I do like to study my openings pretty heavily a little bit so that I can kind of build it. And then that way, once I'm in like a comfortable position and I start falling out of prep, I kind of still know I'm in like an easy area to navigate. Other times it's just playing very fast-paced chess, like playing tons of blitz for days on end or something and trying to like set your goal of like I'm trying to get this elo within this time frame and I'm only playing blitz until I do it. And that kind of allows you to like take things serious. I think you got to find that mindset of like like this mindset is going to only work for slow paced chess, and this mindset, okay, I need to keep up the pace, I need to play faster. Like having that kind of mental block of like bringing through that mental block, I guess, and just like explaining to yourself, like, hey, I only have 20 minutes to make or 20 seconds to make a move. Like you need to move fast or you're going to run out on time.
Yeah.
Or just playing like a 3-2 or something where you get an increment on each time. That helps the most because you never like truly run out of time as fast, and it allows you to still make like fast paced moves, but you're still going to gain some time back. I think that works a lot.
What about puzzles? Do you incorporate them at all to try to build that intuition?
I used to a lot, but I've heard mixed opinions on puzzles. I've heard both good things, and I've heard sometimes like only studying puzzles a ton does not help your intuition in a chess game, because puzzles are very specific scenarios that don't occur as often as you think.
Interesting.
So okay. I've heard both sides of it. I've studied it a lot. What I do recommend instead of like puzzles per se is playing out like a historical game on a board or something, or even in like analysis if you don't have a board, and just like figuring out why like Morphy played this move, and figuring out like why this was a good move, why the sacrifice works, like things like that. I love to do, because it's still like a puzzle within a game kind of, but it's more of a realistic like scenario of like the game started fresh and it shows you how this scenario ended up. And I like those more because it allows you to know like how to get into those positions or those critical puzzle moments and learn to think. But like it's also like showing you the opening they used and being like, hey, in this game in the Philidor defense, like Morphy played this, and it allows you to kind of know the right moves in the Philidor or know the right moves. So not only are you studying intuition on puzzles, but you're also studying the right moves in a line in like a Philidor or Sicilian. You can kind of recall that game and know how Morphy played it or another player.
Yeah, so much good stuff there. I really like that idea of, I think one of the real challenges of puzzles is that you're just thrust into this moment without any of the backstory. And at least for me, in my games, the backstory is everything. You know, everything that has happened leading up to that puzzle moment is impacting whether or not I can solve the puzzle or whether or not I can even recognize there's a puzzle. So it's a very interesting idea to say, I want to see the buildup, and then I'm going to solve the puzzle after seeing the buildup to it. So I think that's a very interesting approach. Are there any specific people you go to? I heard Morphy. Any other people that you go to try to build that?
So I usually just read like little books that are at the chess club that I go to, and they have like a whole library where you check one out and you kind of look through. There was this one book that I was reading called The King in Jeopardy that I had like this really strong player at the club. He recommended to me, and he would sit through every week for like a month or whatever and kind of show me like a game out of the book that we would play out, and he'd explain to me why they were doing things and allow me to like build that intuition of finding crazy moves that are hard to find. I do like looking a lot of the Morphy games, and the Micaiah Tal games are very interesting too. Because he played chess in all the wrong ways, and I think that's such an interesting way to like look at chess. It's like sometimes you got to look for those chaotic or barbaric moves that don't make sense, and even just calculate. Like there's not just the right moves in chess, there's the moves that make absolutely no sense, but sometimes they work. And I feel like that's the way I had to get my mindset, was like finding that crazy knight sacrifice, or like finding crazy critical moments in the game that just totally can change the game for the best for you. But you got to like train your mind to look for like, hey, I don't just have to drive straight or drive to the left or the right. I can drive off the road if I want to. Like knowing that that option is still there for you, I feel like it's something that's crucial to learning how to get like really into chess and really barbaric sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great challenges, right? Especially as you study and learn more, these are all the right moves, this all feels right. I often will hit that moment in my game where I'm like, okay, the safe move is just develop this piece. But, what about this h-pawn push? And I'm like, no, I can't do that. That's too much. And then the computer will be like, why didn't you push the H pawn? I'm like, oh, okay, fine, computer.
And I think that's the hardest thing for me is like trying to like find the positional, like improving moves that are very small and not like crazy brilliant sacrifices. Yeah. And like when you train your mind to finding the chaotic moves, it's so hard to find like the very small improvement moves, like a prophylaxis move or like a move that makes like, I wouldn't say it doesn't make sense, but it's like, it makes sense, but it's very like low key. It's very like hiding under the radar. And then you got moves that are just like, boom, like dropping a huge piece. There's like a crazy, crazy move. And then your opponent's like, what, for 5 minutes? Sometimes it's not always about that. It's playing the slow waiting moves in chess.
Yeah. Those are the moves I'm always looking for, are the Karpov moves. Are you trying to find more of the big tall moves?
It's actually the opposite for me. It's trying to find those small improvement moves. I think with social media in general, it's made like the rook sacrifice moves and like all the crazy chaotic moves. It makes like that the big billboard of chess, but like chess is not all about crazy sacrifices and stuff. And the problem is it starts to get so globalized that every player you come across thinks that the only way to play chess is like to find crazy sacrifices. And it's hard to like train your mind to finding the boring, like, like right improving moves. And I feel like to be a very good chess player, you've got to learn how to navigate that. Like you got to learn how to be able to switch your mind from those crazy Macaya Tao moments to like those very positional defensive moves that make a lot of sense, and knowing when to play them are a huge crucial point in the game. Sometimes you shouldn't play a sacrifice until you castle or you play prophylaxis moves to stop your opponent from going on some crazy attack or something. And those are key moments that I need to like work on, is just positional and very like slow paced chess.
And how do you do that? How have you been trying to train that?
Honestly, reviewing games like Morphe and like some other players, but I try to like find players that play a lot more positional, I guess, and like look at why they did that. Like Morphe, I look at like his crazy opera game. He didn't make those sacrifices until he made the moves that make the most sense. Like there's always a meaning behind a sacrifice. I always say if the sacrifice has no reasoning behind it, it's just a blunder. Like there needs to be a strong reason why you play a sacrifice. So sometimes I try to understand, like, in this position, Morphe only sacrificed this piece because he had his king in safety. He made sure his pieces correlated right. He had a huge threat behind that move. And those are all things that like come into consideration. Like when I'm sacrificing a piece, I always try to like make sure that move makes sense, make sure that my opponent like doesn't have a way out of it. Like if they take the piece, it's a threat. If they don't take the piece, it's still a threat. Like things like that, where it's like you make sure there's three things looking at that piece, every one of them is a bad spot for your opponent.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think when people think of Morphe games, they just think of those explosive moments and they don't think of the crafting of the position that it took for him to get there.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you're not just like going for the crazy nuke in the game. Like they've been building up this whole thing for a while before they just go at it. Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it, is just like looking at what happened throughout the whole thing. It's like a war. It's like you don't just wait for like the nuke that happened. You like want to know the history about how everything occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great points. For me, when I'm looking for, I had a period where I also was like, I'm struggling with finding these little positional moves. And so I used Karpov's Strategic Wins. I found that to be a very useful book, where he's really getting wins by doing cool little positional moves where you're like, what? That's, you're like, that's such a nothing move here. Aren't we pushing in for the win? And he's like, no, like you said, I can sack three pieces, but I've calculated it. The win is not there. the win is with E3. And you're like, what? No, that makes no sense at all. So that's been very helpful for my game.
Yeah, I think books are just the way to go sometimes. Like, trying to analyze chess like a computer just doesn't do you justice sometimes, because you're not a computer, you're a human. You make errors. So sometimes I feel like reading books and seeing what other humans did is the best way to do it, and just understanding like why they played those moves, how they found those moves. Like, it's not just like why they, like, it's not just like the chess side of things, it's like why they found that move, what they, like, what intuition brought them to make that move, kind of, and then hearing their thought process and everything. That's all the context that you need to learning how to do it, I guess.
Yeah. And I did something very weird. My chess club had an influx of books. They're all older books from, like, they're in the old notation from maybe the 50s through the 70s. And I picked up Ludwig Pachman's D4 opening theory, written in like 1960. And I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to go through a little bit of this. Kind of what you were talking about. Like, this is all human, right? There is no computer in this opening theory. This is just Ludwig Pachman going through D4 theory. And it's interesting, like, very early on, I'm like, what? Black would never play that. What is he even talking about? But so it's been interesting just to kind of see that evolution a bit. I don't know if it'll be good for my chess or not. I don't know if I'll spend a lot of time with it, but I think it's interesting to completely sometimes pull yourself out of the computer world.
Yeah. And going off that point, I wanted to add, I do play a lot of gambits lately.
Ooh, okay.
Because the idea is it goes totally against the computer. So if you play people that literally only studied like engines and stuff, they will not know the right moves to play against your opening, and they can fall into very trappy lines. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my openings, or basically all of my openings, are from Eric Rosen, the international master, and he plays a lot of like tricky trappy lines. But when I was first learning chess, I kind of fell into like the content creation world of chess.
Okay.
And someone was good, someone was bad, but I think Eric Rosen is a very like good player. I mean, he's not a grandmaster, but like, he still has beaten a lot of strong grandmasters. And I think he finds like that perfect balance of like good chess and like entertaining chess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I came across one of his videos of the Ponziani. So I still have the Ponziani opening a ton. And I really fell in love with the way like you can get into really crazy sacrifice lines, but you can also get into like these really interesting lines that like that have all these hidden traps that you can study. And that like became what I fell in love with chess with, is like the traps and the tactics and like the crazy interesting moves and stuff. So I studied that, and then I studied the Stafford Gambit for the black pieces.
Okay.
And getting into that a ton. What I can say is like, I play people that like study engines, or they know of Eric's videos, and they might even play the best move that the engine will tell you, but they still will lose to it, because if you know enough theory to like play against the people that are refuting your opening, you can get them into really like tricky lines, and the engine will totally say you're losing, but then like they play one wrong move. And so I kind of love playing like tricky lines, I guess. I think that's just the way my mind works, at least, is just finding those tactics and finding those crazy like moves that are hard. And I think what's cool about Ponziani is it's not even a gambit, but it still feels like a gambit in certain lines. And what's cool about it is like, it's very easy to get into. Like, it's E4, E5, Knight F3, Knight C6, and then you play C3. It's a very normal line to get into. Like, that's the same moves to get into an Italian, a Roy Lopez.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's very easy to get into. And if your opponent doesn't know the right move, they can get into really dangerous territory for you.
Hmm.
And what's cool about it is like, all of the bad moves for white, or I'm sorry, for black, is all of like the moves that make the most sense.
Oh, wow. That's the worst.
Yeah,
like, okay, this move must make sense. And like, haha, you've fallen for my trap.
Yeah, like when I play Ponziani, 9 times out of 10 they'll bring the knight out, they'll bring a bishop out, or they'll push their pawn to the wrong square, and they're all horrible for black. I mean, it's not like totally losing on the spot, but like there's some lines where you actually give a free pawn away, and if they take it, their like knight starts to get really like occupied, and then you start to be able to develop your pieces up the board more. And you can start threatening like some fried liver kind of threat. But
Okay.
what's the real threat behind that is how they defend it. So if they push their pawn to try to kick your knight out and like it prevents the fried liver, it's actually a hidden threat. And you can like queen check them and win a piece with
Oh,
like
wow.
queen to a4 or something. Or you can like try to go on this crazy trading thing, but it's better for white because you have more attackers than they have defenders, and you can start getting like these crazy under promotion mates, things like
Ooh,
that.
my goodness. Sounds very
Yeah.
exciting.
So I kind of studied a lot of those, and I think the
Okay.
best way to study openings in general is just putting them in like chess book where you can like it gives you a free repertoire of whatever you want to learn. And you get like up to 100 moves to make for each color or something. And I use that a lot because it's like you can practice a ton and then it'll give you like, hey, it's time to review your openings. And then you click on it and it'll give you like a quiz in specific like positions in your openings. And you have to find the right move. And then it'll tell you, like, if you can't find it, it'll tell you, like, why this is the right move and how to, like, remember it. And it'll make you play that move, like, 4 or 5 times before it allows you to
Yeah.
progress. I feel like that's the best way to learn my opening because I noticed, like, if you start watching a lot of people that play the Ponziani and remembering those games, like, that'll allow you to remember them too, kind of like the Morphe game and stuff. Like, it's like books. Like, if you recall a lot of those games, you're going to know how to, like, defend yourself in the field war or, like, defend yourself in certain critical moments. And I think, like, when you're setting openings, you need to know your openings, like, in 15 different lines. Because if that's the opening that you choose to play, you need to know a good amount of repertoire to not have your opponent put you in a bad territory in your own opening.
Yeah, it sounds like that's especially for you because you're playing so many gambits. It feels like in gambits, there's a lot of like, you have to know this line because, like you said, one misstep by your opponent and they're lost, but one misstep by you, and now you're like -4 and you're like, uh-oh, what happened?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I usually only ever play the Stafford with the black pieces. I saw the Budapest Gambit that I wanted to get into. It sounded pretty interesting. You can get this kind of crazy smothered mate if you pull it off. But the problem is you develop your knight first, kind of like a ready type of style. And that wasn't for me, like in a way, because then it becomes an Indian defense and I don't know. There's certain ways I like to play. I kind of just like to push my middle pawns and take control of the center, develop my pieces, like all of the normal jumbo that you're supposed to do in chess. And sometimes making those weird knight moves or like weird moves you wouldn't make in a normal game, it doesn't, how do I explain it? It's like you know your opening line, but then there's that like instinctive, principled, like nagging mindset of like, no, I'm supposed to castle. No, I'm supposed to develop my pieces. And if your opponent starts playing weird moves that aren't part of your prep, you're gonna get yourself in a really uncomfortable position and just get dominated because you don't know how to like play normal principles and like get into a comfortable territory.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point that alongside knowing the moves of your opening is knowing kind of the plans and ideas of the opening, right? So if you're playing a classical style opening where you know I want to occupy the center, I want to develop my pieces. If your opponent does weird stuff, you're like, cool, I'll develop my knight then. I'm golden.
I think for that, it's like the Stafford as well. It's like your opponent does not have to accept your knight trade, and it's a variation of the Petrov. Maybe you get into a Petrov and they don't take the free pawn, or that, you know what I mean? And it's things like that where it's like if you're gonna play a gambit, you need to know all of your opponent's like choices. They don't have to take the knight, they don't have to take your free pawn. Like with any gambit, they don't have to accept it. So you need to be prepared to know how to play against like a Petrov, and you need to know how to play in certain lines that aren't in your gambit. Because if you play a gambit and your opponent doesn't accept it because they know it's going to be bad for them, then you need to know how to navigate like the normal variation of your gambit.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people, even if they know it's good for them to accept the gambit, if they don't know the line, they might just be like, oh, it's not worth it. Like, obviously my opponent knows this line. They know all the traps. I'm just not going to accept the gambit. And then you're going like, what? No, take the gambit. Come on, let's make
this exciting. That's what I mean. And if you don't know any of the right moves in like how to play the normal game without the gambit, you're going to be playing really bad.
Yeah. Let's go back in
time. Like if you play a king and you don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was saying, like, if you play a king's gambit or you play into something else and you don't take the pawn or something, or like you play a king's gambit and your opponent doesn't, you're not going to know the right moves to like navigate, or you're just going to get dominated because you don't have a comfortable position to find the right like developing moves.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go back in time a bit though. I'm really curious, did you play as like a young child? Did you just pick up chess recently as a college student? What is your history with chess?
Yeah, so funny enough, I have only been playing not even 2 years. I started in 2023 in September. I was on vacation with my dad on like a fishing trip. And I remember like one night, I don't remember how late it was. It was like some random night or like maybe like 2 a.m. in the morning or something. And I was scrolling through my phone as one does through the YouTube shorts. And I was getting like tons of Gotham chess videos popping up on my like For You page and like Hikaru videos, like the whole content creation side of things, like the Anna Kremling, things like that. And I was like very curious as why chess was like so popular all of a sudden, like on my For You page. So out of curiosity, I like was like, you know what? I always hear like the myth that like chess makes you more smart and like chess is a hard game to learn. And I don't know. I mean, in high school, there was those people that played chess and they always asked me if I wanted to play. And I was never like, nah, I don't want to play. It seems too difficult. Mm-hmm. One of those kind of people. So I figured I'd take on a new challenge because I like when I was 10, I learned how to solve a Rubik's Cube. And I figured if I can do that, I can learn a lot of challenging things. Mm-hmm. And I think that allowed me to like understand my mind. Like I see a lot of strategic and like puzzles and stuff. So I kind of got into like learning chess. I installed the chess.com app on my phone and I started playing through their little like scenarios of like how the pieces move. Like how to checkmate, how to prevent stalemate, like all of the simple things, I guess. They don't show like the principles and all of that and openings, but they teach you like how the pieces move. And that's kind of where my journey started, was just learning how the pieces move, teaching myself. I kind of took notes off their videos that they showed of like what each piece does, how each piece moves, things like that, and like how check worked, how checkmate worked, things like that.
So you really knew nothing about chess. You didn't even know how the pieces moved.
No, I knew nothing. It was starting from square one. And this was after the whole Queen's Gambit, like incline and everything. Like I didn't even know the show came out until like last year. Like it was this, I don't know. It was just this huge journey of like all these people that started during COVID and stuff. And I was like, even past all of that. And yeah, I just randomly found like the motivation on vacation to just learn. And I mean, that's just kind of where I found out it was an easy game to learn, but it's a really hard game to get good at.
Yeah. And what kind of drew you in? Like you start seeing how the pieces move. I mean, I think a lot of people just be like, oh my goodness, there's so many pieces. Forget it. It's not worth it. Like what made you think like, yes, this is for me. I'm going to go hard into this thing.
I think it was just like, I don't know. It was like the checkers and like chess kind of mindset. It's like checkers. Every like piece kind of does the same thing with chess. It's like every piece has an assigned role and it's got that like that. I don't know. It's just got that natural like strategy, like intuition where like you have to be good at like strategizing in the game to be good at it. And I found that like that was really interesting and that there was no like luck involved really. It's more so just like how the game works, how you play, how each piece, like how you're going to move each piece, things like that. And as someone that like learned the Rubik's Cube phase and like learned all the puzzles and just like liking doing like brain teasers and like all of the like hard intricate stuff, like I don't know, I fell in love with like learning how to solve the Rubik's Cube. I spent like 5 months studying the algorithms and stuff to learn it. Once I did, I love that like wow factor of like, wow, you can solve that really fast.
Yeah.
And like I kind of loved that side of things. Like I loved like being able to solve brain teasers really fast that people struggled at. Like that just made me like, I don't know, it had this like cool feeling to it. Like, wow, maybe people think I'm intelligent or people think that like my mind can work different. So learning chess, it was like, it was really easy for me to learn, I guess. It was like, oh, this piece does this, this piece does that. The knight moves in an L. Like, I don't know why I got that so easily, but I did. It was more so just like learning openings, learning like how to play principles and all of the hard struggles that come into chess as like someone playing stronger and like competitive. That was the whole struggle through like the last 2 years, was just learning how to play positional, learning how to play tactical, learning how to play certain openings and understanding notation and all of those things.
Circling back for a second, so when you got into chess, it was like almost like a hardest brain teaser maybe you've done. Did you have any thoughts of like, ooh, I'm gonna go far with this, I'm gonna really wow people and I'm gonna be like the world champion or a grandmaster? Or did you go in just kind of being like, I'm just really interested in this puzzle and I want to see how far I can get?
I kind of like, at first I wanted to see what the hype was about it, I guess, so I learned for myself. Once I kind of found this natural like curiosity for it, I started I knew my dad played it. Like he learned how the pieces moved, and that was he didn't know openings, he didn't know like principles, he just kind of knew how the pieces worked and he developed his own little strategy without anything. I remember once I learned, like we played some games on the board or whatever just for the hell of it, and I kind of played it out and he would beat me a ton. And it was this constant like feeling of like, I'm going to beat you, like very competitive nature.
Yeah,
that kind of took over. It went from like being a fun little game to like, nah, I need to get good at this game. Like, I don't know why, but I just want that one up. So I started, you know, playing chess. And I remember my shift leaders at my job at the time, when I came back, fast forward to like towards the end of that year when I learned, I would play them through like Game Pigeon on my phone and like chess.com and stuff. And we would just play little games. And I remember like getting destroyed by my dad, getting destroyed by my shift leaders, because they played like in little clubs in like elementary school. Mm. And at some point after playing them for months and months on end, something clicked, and like how the pieces move and critical like trading points and stuff and forking. Mm-hmm. And that stuff kind of like clicked after a while, and eventually like I beat my dad with the scholar's mate one day when I saw it.
Jeez.
Yeah. And he didn't know what hit him, and he was like, you just beat me in four moves. And he was like freaking out the whole day, and he was like, this kid's a prodigy right here. And I was like, nah, it's just some cheeky little thing I did to you. And then I did it to him a couple other times when he wasn't paying attention. Like we play some very like sophisticated like position, and then like the next time I would just play four moves and made him or something. But yeah, he caught on pretty quick eventually. And I had to start finding like little openings and things. But yeah, it's fun when you get people to fall for like little cheeky openings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it wasn't until I finally started beating like my shift leaders and like my dad that I started taking chess a little bit more seriously and like realizing like, maybe I should learn how to like get good. Because like I thought I was like good at the time. I thought I was like a strong player maybe, and I started getting good. And then I, this is like fast forward to like 2024 now, started like 2024. I went to another job with some other people now, and I'm no longer working at that place. And I had a manager that played chess and like Dungeons and Dragons and some strategic kind of games. And I told him like, we should play a game sometime. and he wasn't really up for it, but he told me, like, I was like, oh, I wish I could find people that I can play. Nobody really wants to play me anymore because they're not like into chess. They kind of just like grew out of a phase. Like, my dad wasn't like a huge chess player. So I was trying to find people that like really liked playing chess that I can play. And he found me this chess club right down the street in Naperville, because at the time I was working in Naperville. And it was funny. He's like, have you ever looked? And I was like, no. And yeah, all I did was type in like chess clubs near me, and it popped up right there in Naperville. Like, and I was like, yeah. And I was like, wow, it's right down the street from where I work. I might as well check it out. So I think, I don't remember what day it was, but I think like the next week I was like, I'm set on going there. I told my dad. He was like, okay, cool. Like, go check it out. Just meet some people your age and like play. And they had this like free adult club that they were promoting. And it was funny enough, it like just got made. Like, oh, wow. The building has been there forever teaching kids and doing all sorts of stuff, but they like had just came out with the adult club like that same like week or two.
Oh wow.
So I was like, oh wow, like what are the odds of the timing being just right? So I went there that like next Friday, and I met Julio, who was also on the show a while back, like last July. He's my coach now, or one of my coaches. And I met like some really cool people that are either really good at chess or just really good at like talking to you and being very empathetic and understanding like the struggles and kind of getting you out. So I met a lot of people, a lot of friends through there, and a lot of like coaches and people that helped me get better. And it was a funny story that I have. I played my first game when I got there and was just like introduced to people. I played some guy that was like, I want to say 12 to 1400. And we played a game, and I didn't know principles. I didn't know anything. My strategy was just moving pieces, defending everything I could. And I still survived like all the way to the like really, a really deep part of the game. And then he beat me because he knew like how the pieces worked and like crazy tactics and things like that. And he was like, man, you got to be like 1200, 1400, whatever. He said that. And I was like, I don't know any, like, I don't know a rating system. Like, I don't know anything. He's like, what openings do you play? And I was like, I don't know what that means. Yeah. Like, I've never played an opening. And he was like, wow, man. Yeah. And he was like all impressed. And I was like, he's like, what's your strategy? And I was like, I was just defending every piece for like 20 minutes. I didn't have a strategy. I just pushed some pawns and defend stuff and bring some pieces out. Like, I didn't have a strategy. And then they started like telling me, once they found that out, like I would come there every Friday, and that just became my routine, like fitting it in while I'm working. Like every Friday, I literally changed my schedule on my working availability to go there every Friday night and just stay consistent as like a way of getting away from things, like just life and kind of meeting people that are into the same thing I am. And that was like the best decision I ever made, like for chess, because it allowed me to meet a lot of people that struggle with the same things. A lot of people that have been playing for a very long time that like can coach you and show you things you're doing wrong, show you things you should learn. Like, it's always nice to be around people that can kind of like socialize and play games and tell you what you're doing wrong. Like, I don't know. I just found that way better when you're playing someone and you lose and they're like, this is why you lost. And they show you the moves you played. Yeah. Versus like playing an engine or like watching your like daily game review, and it's like telling you like knight e5 was the best move, and like you don't know why,
right?
Like you're trying to figure it out. I don't know, it's just like that human aspect of things that made chess feel like so fun, even when it's a very difficult game. Like even when the losses hit, it's like having those friends that are like, hey man, we've all been there. Like, hey, it don't worry. Like, you lose more than you win in chess. Like, it's just a whole learning journey. Mm-hmm. And with that, like, I started going there. They started teaching me some openings, like the London. And I started building my principles and stuff. I learned my principles first. And then once I learned how to castle and do all those kind of things, they started teaching me some openings. And a lot of them would tell me to like find my own opening. They wouldn't teach me. They would just be like, no, find your own. Like everyone's on their own journey. And it took me like 6 months to find like an opening that really like stuck. But once I found the Ponziani, I kind of fell in love with that. And then I like came across the Stafford like end of last year or something. And that was kind of an opening. I was like, I love this too. But no, I never really took it like really, really serious until I got into that club.
Okay.
And then I want to say 4 months into it, this is kind of where the
Let's talk about
competitive
the club
side of
for just a minute, because I think it's such an important moment, right? Is that like clubs
Yeah.
so much, right? They first of all add that social element, so you have other people who are into your same hobby. I would love, imagine if the engine could show empathy and it was like, I know you missed this tactic here, but it's okay. We all miss tactics. You're like, shut up, engine. No, you don't. You never miss tactics. So was it most
Yeah, I love
people
that.
that were a little bit older than you since you're a college student, or are there other college students, and were there some kids that kind of snuck in a trench coat or something?
So it was more, it's an adult club. You have to be 18 and you have to be out of high school. So
Okay.
I just came across it and it's mostly college students, older people as well, like some people that retired, some people that just played chess since they were a little kid, some people that have met each other through team games and tournaments, and it's just a whole community. So it's like
Yeah.
people that played at the high schools in Naperville and like areas around there where they're like, hey, I played this guy when I was, 16 years old in
Yeah.
the high school chess team.
That's
And
funny.
it was funny that the owner of that chess club at Elite Chess, his name is Jeff. He was actually a coach for the team on the high school team, Niqua. And he kind of was teaching a lot of people how to play chess, playing like competitive games. So a lot of his students grew up and started going there. And then they started teaching their own kids. And this whole like cycle kind of came about.
That's
So
funny.
one of my like coaches or advisors that kind of comes there, and he doesn't want to say he's my coach, but he helps me advise things. He's like 2200 or something, and he was a student of Jeff's that became like an adult now, and he kind of shows me the ropes and stuff. But it's kind of cool that everybody's kind of like a community of like students, teachers, coaches, like retired people, young kids. I mean, like when you play tournaments or mostly tournaments, or like every now and then you'll have like their kids that they'll mention that are like, my kid's 4 years old and he's been playing chess for like the whole year and he's playing all these tournaments and stuff. And you have those like chess dads that are like telling you all their
Yeah.
accomplishments with that. So I don't know. I just found that really cool, that everybody kind of built their community up and they can teach you like cool things you haven't learned, or they show you like a book they read 5 years ago they found that changed like the same pinnacle point that you're at. I find that really cool too. It's like one player might be an 1800 and you're still on your like beginner journey, and they can tell you like, hey, I've been on the same struggle bus that you've been on. Like this is my advice. These are the books I read. These are the openings that I learned. These are the strategies that I did. And everybody has their own journey, but like that helps navigate things a lot more.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then it
So
seems
that
like
was really fun.
eventually
Yeah.
you end up going to your first tournament. What inspired you to like take that next step and be like, all right, I'm moving out of the safety of the club into the lion's den?
Yeah. So the club itself actually hosts tournaments. I think it's one of the only clubs in America that can actually give you norms for like a grandmaster title. And cool enough, they actually host tournaments there, and they host some tournaments around like the local colleges around the area, when they do like some big ones. But I know they do like these quad tournaments where instead of playing like an insane day's worth of like tournaments, you just show up and you play four games, or I'm sorry, three games of the best four players in your table. And that was kind of what I got into. I was sitting down one time and I don't know. I get these like days where I can't lose almost. Like it's just like I'm so on. And then there's some days where I just come and I get destroyed. Like six games. It's just like I lose to the worst player on the team, or like at the club. And yeah, there is like a day where I just was smoking everyone. And my coach was like, "Man, you should play in your first tournament and see how you do." And they kind of pitched it to me and told me about it like coming up on a Sunday, like that Friday. And I was like, maybe I should. And I remember, like, I just got motivated one day. I signed up for like the USCF pass, and I put towards like the entry fee for the tournament, and I joined it, and every person at that tournament was like a little kid, and it scared me so bad.
Yeah, you're like, wait, is this a scholastic event? And they're like, no, this is just a regular event. Welcome.
Yeah, and it was like every opponent, I swear to God, was like 4 to 8 years old. Like they were all little kids. And there wasn't a single adult in there. And it was like so, it was so intimidating for me. Like I fear kids in chess so much more than adults, because adults are like, they're thinking about like their bills. Did I leave the stove on? Like so many different things. It's like kids. It's like they're 4 years old. The only thing they have the care in the world about is chess and like learning their ABCs. Like it's just so scary when they're sitting there and all they learn is chess. It's like all they study. And now it's like they don't just need books. They have so many social media resources. Like back then, like around Morphy's time and Fisher's time, like none of them had the internet. Now it's like you get these kids that are 8 years old already pushing like Grandmaster because they had YouTube and they had engines to study, and some of them only like learn through engines. So yeah, it's just like that was so intimidating to play like little kids. But my coaches would tell me like, don't show any of these kids mercy. Like they're not going to show you the same mercy. So I kind of took that mindset. I went in and I won my first tournament that I entered.
Ooh, nice.
So
Did you win two
yeah,
of
I
the
went like three.
games? Oh, okay. Looks like you
I'm
won
pretty
two of the
sure I
games.
think I won. Yeah, so out of three, I think I won two and I lost one.
And the other
And I
person.
won. Or you know what? It was four games. So it was it I won two games, I lost one, and I tied with someone else. We both had two wins, both had a loss, and we played a 5-minute blitz. So these games were like rapids, or yeah, we had to play a 5-minute blitz for the tiebreaker, and I had built up my like speed chess intuition because I'm better like fast paced. As of now, my slow pace is a bit better, but like at the time, my fast pace was a little bit better. So I played this stronger like girl. I don't know. She's probably around like 11, 12 years old maybe. And we played a game, and yeah, I beat her in like 2 minutes. I just totally destroyed her. At some like we played in some opening I think I was familiar with, and at some point I found a trap. I won in the rook like really early on, and then from there I just went on some crazy like don't lose a piece, don't lose a piece, like just keep going on a crazy attack. And once I won the rook, everything started falling apart. Yeah, I won, and I won the trophy. And then I started getting into some other tournaments, same kind of quads. And this is where like the plateau kind of happened. So like my second and third tournament, I think it was the second and third, I did really bad. Like I did really poorly. I would get, and it felt so bad losing the kids, like versus adults. I don't know. It's just something about it. It was just like, man, I'm like 18 years old losing to like 8-year-old kids. Like it just does not feel good. And just like having it highlighted, like right in front of you, it's like the most serious chess game like ever. Like it's quiet. There's a timer. There's like touch move rules. There's an arbiter. Like it made it feel so much more intense. And it's like the wins felt so good at times, but the losses were just devastating. And it totally destroyed my like competitive nature of wanting to play like competitive for a while. So after losing, like I lost one like 3-1 or something. Like or I lost three games and I won like one. And it really hit. So the first, I think it was my second game, I lost all my games. I lost all three. So that really hit. And then I took a little break and I came back and I lost all three, or I'm sorry, I lost two and I won one game. And I was like, man, what am I doing wrong? Because at first it was like I lost all three, then I finally like lose two and win one. And then it was like, man, I'm like not only am I losing, but I'm losing like time, I'm losing money. Like, I'm putting tons of money into like these tournaments. Yeah. And like when you don't see good results, like it really hurts because it breaks the bank. And as a college student, like you don't make a ton of money. So it's like when you start getting like 20, 30 bucks or something, like that's a lot of money. That's like a full gas tank right there. So putting that towards a tournament, like every time you want to play, it really like hurts because it's like, man, I just want that trophy. I just want like something to make the money and the time I spent like practicing for the tournament. I want that result. And when it doesn't come out in your favor, like this is a very good way of teaching you how to like be accountable for your mistakes, because like there's no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the hardest thing.
What'd you do to get over that? Right. Cause it's one of the big challenges that, you know, like the older people are telling you, you generally lose more than you win. So how did you kind of find the tenacity to push through that and say, okay, sometimes I'm going to lose a bunch and it's going to be terrible and it's going to feel bad?
So I had to take it more like, I had to take it more of like a competitive like thing than like a sport, I guess. And I had to realize like, you know what, if I'm not ready for a tournament, I need to take a break and I need to get better before I get back in. So it's kind of like a boxing match. It's like, you don't just like throw yourself in the ring with like knowing how to punch. Like you need to know how to defend. You need to know like all the right like moves to do, the right sequences, like how to condition yourself throughout the matches. Like it's a whole process. So I kind of thought about it the same way. It's like, I need to learn how to condition myself in chess. I need to learn how to like defend. I need to know how to switch on the offense. I need to know the right things to do. So I would review my games with my coach in like my tournaments, see what I'm doing wrong. And I think it was just like this moment of like, I took like a 3 or 4 month break from competitive entirely.
Okay.
And I focused on a couple openings, like one opening for white and two openings for black or something. And like one against D4 openings and one against like normal E4 openings, and just trying to find like really strong openings. So I found the Ponziani, and then I found the Stafford later on. I played some Dutch against like D4.
Okay.
And when my opponent would play like a Sicilian, like I'd already be like stressing out because I don't know. Right. I know that Sicilian is such a like complicated opening. Mm-hmm. So like I didn't study anything with Sicilian. So all I did one day is just like my friend played a Sicilian and I like lost really bad. And he was like, here's like 3 or 4 moves like to get into an open Sicilian every time. Yeah. So I took that advice of just learning like 3 or 4 moves of every opening you encounter that you're struggling with. And it gets you into more familiar territory. So I went back in my 4th tournament now, like my 4th or my 5th, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
And this was like a DuPage championship game. Like this was like a big event going on. Mm. And I went there and I went 2-2. Like I studied a ton for this tournament. Okay. And I still went 2-2. But the one game I played, I was playing like the strongest opponent I had. And I had him on the ropes. I was about to win the game. And he side ranked me because I was pushing my pawn, promoting too fast, not looking for threats. And I lost. And he was jumping up and down, like freaking out. We were talking during the game and stuff. He was such a chill guy. But when he side ranked me, like I was so upset. And I wasn't upset at anyone but myself. And just having that like pure like anger at myself, like that disappointment, it just hit so bad. So I had to find a way to like calm myself down, find that like, all right, you're like, this is your second game. You still have 2 games left. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, don't go 0-2. You need to go like 2-2. So I kind of found that like Zen, went back into my games and played, and I won the other 2.
Nice.
And I was like, all right, I'm still doing like bad, but I'm not doing as bad as I was. And then I went into another quad a little bit after, and I won another tournament. I went like 3-0.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. So it sounds like
you had, and funny enough,
a lot of success.
Oh, sorry.
And then some trials and tribulations in there and trying to balance out, like, how high do you get from your successes? Do you try to temper them and be like, hey, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose? Are you running around the city naked going like, I won?
So like when I won my first trophy, that was like the first trophy I've ever won. So like I was kind of gloating and like, hey, like I finally won a trophy at something. I'm finally good at something. Yeah. And that was kind of like a pride moment for me. And like especially my parents seeing that I have a trophy, like they were really happy, like seeing that I was doing good at something. And then when I won my second trophy, I specifically asked my coach to give it to me in a different color. So I got one in two different colors, one in white and one in black. And I put them in my room as like a big like moment. But what was like really cool is that I started playing like team tournaments that didn't have anything on the line other than like pride and like sometimes like a Chicago rating, but it allowed me to play like for the game's sake, not for like the tournament, like the trophy's sake. Like I didn't want to have a reason to only play for like the trophy or only play for this. Like I wanted to play just because I had this natural like wanting to play the game, like wanting to help the team out, like things like that. Just building a competitive nature, but not having like a reason behind it, really. And I played in a team tournament, like I want to say maybe the end of last year, like maybe the start of this year. I don't remember exactly. It was pretty recent though, and I played as an underdog in like the Chicago team tournament. They hosted it there, so I didn't have to go anywhere, and I told them I wasn't going to join their team because I had to travel kind of like far towards the city, like back and forth. It just was so much of a hassle, so I said, "Nah, I'm good." But he said that I could join if they ever like needed an extra player, whatever. So funny enough, I came there just to play the team, like the normal like club games. And then the other side of the room was like the tournament, and I wasn't on the list to join the tournament. And they had like three extra players or whatever. And me and my coach both wanted to play in the tournament, and he was way stronger. And my coach walked up to me and told me that they had extra players and I could join. And then me and my advisor or whatever were both like kind of arguing for the like title or like for the spot. And then they were like, hey, two other players walked in, so there's a spot for all of you. And then we were like, okay, cool. And his rating was so high, they couldn't find somebody to pair him against.
Uh-oh.
Because there was so much of a difference. So I think at some point somebody really strong came in, so we played against him. But yeah, they threw me in as like the underdog because my USCF isn't like ridiculously high. It's like 400.
Yeah.
So I played against someone pretty much like pretty much more higher than me, like around 1,000 range or something like that. Because I didn't really have much of a choice. They were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah. And I played the guy and I ended up beating him. And I was the only guy at my table that won a game for our team. And then I think my coaches started taking me a little bit more seriously as a player, even though like my online and my USCF was like pretty low, like around the 400 range USCF and like around the 600 range, like 700 range on chess.com. Nobody was really taking me serious, but like I knew like a number was just a number. And like the rating is just a rating. The potential, it like you can play like a 1200 some like one day, you can play like a 1400. Like you shouldn't like limit yourself. Like my coach told me that there's a floor and there's a ceiling. Like the floor is where your minimum is, and your ceiling is your peak that you found. And there's like a ladder, and sometimes you just climb up that ladder and you hit that peak every now and then, and then you fall off the ladder and you're back so you're back to that bare minimum that you were at. And that's like the plateau kind of where it's like this constant climb on the ladder. And it's like taking step by step. Every time you climb up that ladder and take one more step, you're getting higher and higher to your peak. And sometimes you randomly get these spurts or something. You go to the top of the ladder and you find your peak, and then you fall off a couple. And then it's like this constant battle. And I noticed the plateaus were like really, really, really bad. Like the wins didn't feel like wins at a point, and the losses were just devastating. And it was like, you like how to explain it in chess. I feel like it builds like perfectionists. Like you blunder your bishop on move 15 in a game, and your opponent doesn't see it, and you win because your opponent missed some critical points in the game. And it doesn't feel like you won because you played your best. It feels like you won because your opponent played your worst, like their worst. So it starts to feel like I'm winning for all the wrong reasons. Like I'm not winning because I'm playing good. I'm winning because my opponent's playing bad. And it starts to hit you that it's like the wins don't feel like wins, and the losses like are no one's fault but your own. And it starts to really like impact your mindset in chess. And I had a lot of moments where I'd burn out and I'd be like, man, I don't want to play chess anymore. I'm like done with chess. I don't want to play for months. Like, I don't want to do this. And I had this like anger at chess. Like, why am I so bad at this game? Why am I blundering? Like, why is every win when I make a mistake and my opponent doesn't see it? And I had to start like fixing that mindset a bit and like learning how to not necessarily take breaks, but like play less and less chess, but still be like consistent and learn that like burnout happens to everyone, not just yourself, and that everybody has those moments. And like just realizing why I'm playing bad, like analyzing games. And I think what happened was at some point I was at such a bad burnout that I didn't want to play anymore. And it didn't take till someone told me to just read a book and study like other players' games. Like it was kind of this mindset of me, like Twitch, like watching other people play a game that you're into, like not playing the game. It's kind of like fun to see other players playing the game. So I was like, maybe that's kind of how books work in chess. So I played a game out on the board, and it kind of became this like I'm watching two really good players play a game, but I'm not playing at all. Like I have no say in what they do. And then watching like Hikaru play games in the open, watching like Fabiano Caruana and like some cool players playing in like tournaments and stuff, and just watching their games in the commentary. That was really interesting. It was kind of like watching a football game, but like for chess. It was kind of like a new thing to see. And I think that kind of allowed me to change my mindset with burning out. And like when I play tournaments now, it's kind of just like that mindset of like you're gonna lose a lot more games than you win. And you need to just be happy that you win the games. Don't look so deep into it. Don't be so hypocritical, like so critical on yourself. And don't like beat yourself up if your opponent missed a move. That's their fault, not yours. Like you need to, obviously, you need to stop like blundering pieces and hanging pieces, but you also like cannot discourage every time you win a game. It's because your opponent isn't playing their best. That's just how like the game works. Like, did Jordan win all six games that he played in the championship because he played his best, or was the teams he played having an off day? Like, there's so many different ways to look at it, and that's with everything. So you can't beat yourself up over every win that you win and every loss that you lose. You gotta just take at it with a grain of salt and kind of look at the better side of things.
I think that's such a great point. It can be so hard, right? That it's easy to internalize the losses for the mistakes you made. And then if your wins are coming from your opponent's mistakes, it's easy to brush those aside and be like, those don't count. And so then it's like, well, so I never win, I only lose. And so I think that is a
Right,
great point.
and the scariest part about it is some people take that very serious, and they're like, the only reason I won is because my opponent played bad. And some people look at the wins as like, I won the game because I'm good, and they never realize I hung this, I hung that, I hung my queen on 27, and then they finally get into like a serious tournament, and they just get obliterated, and they don't know why until they like review, my wins aren't wins, my wins are lucky games. I mean, that's kind of the only like luck factor of chess, is when your opponent doesn't see a bad move that you made, or you make a sacrifice that has no crazy threat behind it, and you're just putting on this poker face. Please don't look to h3. Please don't look to h3. Look at the a side of the board. It's kind of like that whole moment. But yeah, no, I just think that chess is a very strategic game, but it's also like a game that's very like therapeutic, but also very like aggravating at times. Like it can really help you get like your emotions out and play like really strong games and just like find a beauty within the game. But then you can also just find this like pure anger at yourself, this disappointment, and this like aggravating, like, what am I doing wrong moment. And I think that's like the beauty and the sorrow of chess, kind of what people say. It's just like this good and the bad side of things.
Exactly. I think this is the perfect place to wrap up, Trenton. We've been going for a while. I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours.
Yeah,
I really
honestly.
appreciate all the insights. I think you've dropped quite a few gems today that'll be very helpful, from mindset to burning out to dealing with playing little kids in tournaments. Like, you've seen it all already, Trenton.
Yeah.
So if people want to reach out to
I think
you,
the best part about it. Oh, sorry.
I was just gonna say, if
I
people want
think
to reach out to you, is there anywhere people can contact you?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to reach out to me, I stream on Twitch,
Okay.
on Trent Tactical on Twitch. I have a YouTube account I'm kind of working on as well, Trent Tactical Chess. They can
Okay.
reach out to me through there. Mostly my Twitch, I stream on there, pretty often, or I would say like decently often. I streamed recently, like a couple days ago with my friend. I actually had a FIDE master come in and raid me, so that was kind of cool. And if anyone wants to ever come in there, we play games with viewers in there and we just kind of talk about things. My friend is a little bit stronger than me, so he'll review games, talk things over, and we kind of just go on there. But yeah, I'm kind of trying to build like a community. They can always add me on like my chess.com. It's just Trent Tactical on chess.com as well. But yeah, I would love to play people that are stronger than me, people that are still learning. Like, I'm very optimistic when it comes to playing people and learning things. That's probably the best way to reach me though, is my Twitch or through there. But yeah, that's it would be really cool to meet some new people that are really strong. I
All
listen
right.
to Chess Journeys.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Trenton. I really appreciate all the thoughts, all the advice. And for those of you out there, I hope this is the week where you make your ratings gains and everything goes great. And if not, and you lose 3 games to little kids in a quad, don't worry. You'll be okay. Trenton was okay. You'll be okay. And I'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.